We present My Word. A panel game devised by Tony Schran and Edward J. Mason. And here to introduce the teams is John Julius Norwich.
Thank you. Our teams for this week are Dennis Powell, Gillian Reynolds, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norton. First, a round of Victorian vulgarisms, slang terms that were considered trendy about a century ago. Frank, what would you suppose to have been the meaning of the phrase to fly a flag of distress?
I think it meant certainly in the 18th century to wear a rosette in your hat. It's a naval term, to wear a rosette in your hat if you were a half pay officer, which meant there was no war on and you had no ship and you had to exist on half pay.
He can make up anything, can't he? He's totally wrong, of course. No marks. To fly a flag of distress actually meant to have a piece of your shirt showing through or protruding from your trousers. In the former case, it was taken as a sign of poverty. There's a marvellous bit in the diaries of the Reverend Francis Kilvert, where he says that in the village of Dursley in Gloucestershire, it was the custom when people went home at night, the gentlemen went ahead with their shirt deliberately pulled out of the back of their trousers at the back to show the ladies the way. And they were called Dursley lanterns. Gillian, to say of a horse that it has devotional habits, what does that mean?
Devotional habits, well, praying. Would it have something to do perhaps with its knees or not knees or falling down, the stammers, something like that?
Yes, you're very, very close. Its knees, its front knees falling down, as you said.
Falling down, kneeling. Now, I can't get any closer to Victorian horses than that.
Anything to do with the Paston papers?
Not. it really meant that if a horse that was weak at the knees and was therefore liable to stumble and therefore to kneel, I mean, to go down on its knees in front.
I said that.
It's more or less what you said. You didn't quite say it all, did you? But you said it very nearly all. I'll give you 1.5 marks.
Thank you.
Dillis, what did it mean 100 years ago if you said that somebody got a monkey's allowance?
A monkey's allowance? Anything to do with money?
Yes.
Something to do with money?
Something to do with money.
Is a unit of money. I don't know how much it means. Anything to do with that?
No.
No. A monkey's allowance. Well,
nothing.
A monkey. A monkey wouldn't have got very much, would he? No. It's an allowance to a monkey.
He actually got less than nothing.
Less than nothing. He got kicked.
Yes, he got kicked. He got more kicks than halfpence, as people subsequently started saying. A monkey's allowance meant that you expected to get money, you expected to get thanks, you expected to get a fee. Instead of that, you got a kick in the teeth. That was a monkey's allowance. But I'll give you 1.5 marks too, because you were very, very nearly there. Dennis, to use a louse trap.
To use a louse wouldn't be when if a woman put on her wedding ring. To use a last trap. Is it literal or is it...
It's almost literal. It's very nearly literal.
Oh, yes. Yes. Gillian thinks it's the fine tooth comb.
To use a fine tooth comb is precisely right. Mm. I cannot withhold from you... I cannot withhold from you two most well-deserved marks. One to you and one to Gillian. Mm. The team gets two. And now, before we go into round two, Frank and Dennis, here are the quotations that you've been given for the last round. Frank, your quotation is that well-known couplet from The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, a sadder and a wiser man, he rose the morrow morn. And yours, Dennis, is nothing succeeds like success. And so, on we go to a round entitled 2 out of 3. Who or what is missing that would transform the following pair into a perfect trio? Frank. Mrs. Susanna Hall and Mrs. Judith Quiney.
They're the married names of two of the Beverly sisters. No, they're not, no. Billy Wright is one, isn't it, come to think of it. I need a little thrust here.
Well, they were sisters, you're perfectly right there, but they weren't Beverly sisters. They were sisters whose name was, before they were married, infinitely more famous than Beverly.
Oh, it's the Andrews sisters.
Oh, yes, Andrews sisters. The Andrews sisters.
You could hardly find a more famous name which was theirs before they married. They must have thought they were cheapening themselves with Mr. Hall and Mr. Quiney.
Susanna Knowledge, Judith Knowledge.
Oh, so near, so near. But I forced to admit it wasn't even Knowledge. It was Miss Susanna Shakespeare and Miss Judith Shakespeare.
And
they
Hamlet.
Were Shakespeare's children.
Hamlet.
And the third one was, you are Hamlet. Right in saying Hamlet Shakespeare. He was the son. Judith and Susanna were the daughters. So I'll give you one mark for Hamlet. Well done. Gillian. What is missing that would transform the following pair into a perfect trio? A dog and a walnut tree.
Yes, this is a very sexist quotation, and I know about it because it's always coming up on Gardner's Question Time. a woman, a dog, and a walnut tree, the more you beat them, the better they be. Not true, not
You're
true.
Not true. I'm almost ashamed of asking the question. Nonetheless, two marks is what you get.
You
well done.
You shouldn't beat a dog.
But on Gardner's Question Time, they say it does do the walnut tree good to be beaten.
Gillis. The third, please, from equilateral, isosceles, and...
Oh,
equilateral.
Awful.
Yes.
Isosceles.
Oh, yes.
The equilateral means all the same size, same shape, length of size. Isosceles... It's a triangle.
They're all triangles.
They're all triangles, aren't they?
They're both triangles.
Both of them are triangles. Presumably they're all triangles. So what's
are
the
they?
Third one?
No, there can't be another triangle.
The eternal.
Yeah.
She knows. She knows.
Is there a musician in the house?
No. There's the equilateral triangle, which has all its sides the same.
Yes,
there's the isosceles triangle, which has two of its sides the same. And there's the scalene triangle, which has only one of its sides the same. In other words, all its sides are different.
Can therefore apply for supplementary benefit.
And the answer is scalene. There it is. I'm sorry, I can't give you any marks, but there it is. The answer is scalene. S-C-A-L-E-N-E. A triangle that has absolutely none of its sides at all the same.
I've never heard that. I don't know. It isn't true.
Well...
It's not true. Really?
It's an educational program, as I pointed out before. Dennis.
It's not possible.
Officers and gentlemen, men-at-arms, and...
And unconditional surrender.
And unconditional surrender. Well done. What are they?
They're the Sword of Honor trilogy by Evelyn Waugh.
Well done. Two marks. Now, for a round of miscellaneous monosyllables. In 30 seconds, and Leonie is going to time you, in 30 seconds, can you tell me, without help from your teammates, a dozen words, all of one syllable, that define bits and pieces of the human body? Frank, bits and pieces of the human body in 30 seconds, starting from now.
From the top, hair, eye, ear, tongue, mouth, rib, hip, thigh, toe... Knee, foot, nail, heart, vein, blood, tooth.
You had foot?
12. Chin. Heart.
You said heart. No, time's up.
No.
Well done. I made that. What did I make that? I made that. I made it 13. Well done. Gillian. 30 seconds, one syllable only, articles or part articles of clothing, starting from now.
Dress, skirt, top.
Um.
Hat, wig, shoe, sock, vest, pants, cuff, tie. Slip.
Time. Well, 12. Dillis. Single syllable, 30 seconds. Domesticated creatures to be found in or around a farmyard, starting now.
Cow.
Hen.
Cat. Dog. Pig.
Sheep.
No help from your friend.
Sorry, mustn't help. We've had hen.
Oh.
Cock.
Bull.
Bull. what else? I'm not a farmyard girl. Anymore.
No, nine. Dennis.
Mm.
30 seconds. Single syllables. Tools, implements, or utensils used by being held in one hand.
Oh, no.
Starting from now.
Pen. Knife. Fork. Spoon. Nail. Scissors is two scissors. Unless you only have one scissor.
Yeah.
The knife, fork, pen. String. Glass. Thing. Thing. Whenever I have to do anything, they say you can't do that unless you've got a thing for it. Right. Cash, which will get anything done with one hand. Frank. Jug.
Finish. Sorry. Nine. Well done.
Frank's
so,
clever.
Team. Team on my left, Dennis and Frank, are one up on that particular round. And now,
pretty good at getting 39-12.
Shouldn't he get
a now for a round of poetical pairings. Can you quote the lines of poetry that include the following association of two words together? Frank, lines of poetry including the words starry skies.
Starry skies. Sounds like a song, doesn't it?
I don't think it's ever been set to music. If it were, I'd sing it to you, but I don't think it has been. No? Anybody?
She walks in beauty like the night.
Well done.
In some and starry sky. Yeah.
Well, she walks in beauty like the night. Well done. Yes. The cloudiest times and starry skies and all that's best of dark and bright meet in her aspect and her... Gillian. Unfathomed caves.
Oh.
Unfathomed caves. Now wait a minute. Now, is this that poem that's got the noiseless tenor in it as well?
The noiseless tenor, it is.
Has it got the noise? Has it got Mute Inglorious Milton as well?
Mm. It's got Mute Inglorious Milton, yes.
Am I getting warmer?
Ever so warm.
Has it got lowing herds?
Boiling.
Has it got an adjective to practically every noun?
Very nearly.
Is it Gray's Elegy?
It is.
Many a flower, that's right.
Isn't it the gem of purest ray serene in the unfathomed caves down in the sea somewhere?
That's right. Mm. For many a flower is born to blush unseen and waste its sweetness on the desert air. Well, Gray's Elegy, I give you a mark and a half because you so nearly got it. Well done.
Do you know the population of Stoke Poges is almost exactly the same as the population of the city of Vaduz, which is the capital of Liechtenstein.
I told you it was an educational program. Can we go on now? Phyllis. Innumerable bees.
It's Tennyson.
It is?
It's Tennyson. The murmur of innumerable bees.
Wonderful.
Or something else.
Well done, yes. Can you remember what the other thing was? You've got it, really. Can you remember the line immediately before it? The moan
of something doves.
Immemorial elms come in there somewhere.
Well done, you've got it.
Yes.
Together you've got it. The moan of doves in immemorial elms and murmuring of innumerable bees. Well, I can't withhold too much.
It's a wonderful line.
It's lovely.
The murmur of the new
English teachers always give it as an example of onomatopoeia, don't they? The
murmuring of innumerable beings.
Wouldn't you love to hear someone with a stammer read that?
Sound almost better, wouldn't it? The Princess by Tennyson. Anyway, well done, Dillis. 2 marks. Dennis, Maisie Motion.
Is this... and what she did and the other thing.
the little lambs he tied in.
Maisie Motion.
Isn't this meandering with Maisie Motion?
It is.
Yes, Cooper. It's the Sacred River Alph.
The Sacred River Alph. Oh, that's yes. Right. Well done.
Through caverns immeasurable to river. Man. It ran through caverns immeasurable. Not caverns. Dark, unfathomed caves, but caverns immeasurable to man.
Well, measureless. But
measureless.
5 miles meandering with amazing motion through wood and dale the sacred river ran, then reached the caverns measureless to man and sank in tumult to a lifeless ocean. Well done. 2 marks. Coleridge. Xanadu did Kublai Khan. And so it's time that we come... and to Frank and Dennis's quotations. Frank, your quotation from The Rime of the Ancient Mariner by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, a sadder and a wiser man, he rose the morrow morn.
It is a cautionary tale, I tell you. There's a film by W.C. Fields called The Fatal Glass of Beer, which showed the terrors of a teetotaler actually just breaking for a moment. And it is a story I tell of much... a similar fall from grace. There's a chap in our village, and he was a pay clerk in a firm, and one of the girls in the office, it was Mavis from accounts, was getting married, and he was invited to the wedding reception. And he was just going in when he was suddenly stopped by this chap with a strange, staring eye. And the chap also had a very complicated kind of steel coat hanger over his arm. And the chap said, I say, hang on there, and gripped him with his arm. And he said, may I introduce myself? My name is Argent Mulliner. But at school I was called Ancient Mariner, of course. I want to tell you something. He said, have you seen an albatross around here? And the chap waiting to go into the rather shy chap said, No, I haven't. I'm just going in my friend's wedding. He said, hang on, I must get an albatross. See, I've got to shoot it with this thing. And the chap said, what's that? He said, it's a crossbow. The only thing I've ever been able to do in my life is shoot things with arrows. Been a hopeless failure all my life, and I sort of ran into old Tubby Fang. Do you know Tubby Fang? No, you wouldn't. And he said, I'm going on this observer around the world yacht race. Will you come, old lad, and look after the booze? And I had all the booze up on the deck, and suddenly I saw this turkey flying over. And I thought, oh, make a change of the old diet. What? So I got out my crossbow, and I shot it. By God, it was a dead shot. It came down like a sycamore seed, bang on the booze. Broke the lot. All went into the scuppers and over. It wasn't a turkey at all. It was a thing they called an albatross. And when we got back home to harbour after the... We were last, of course. I mean, Tubby was no good at all, the sailor. And I was a celebrity, old boy. He said, and that was years ago. And he said, now I'm looking for another albatross to shoot with my crossbow, and then I'll be lucky again. And the other fellow said, well, I haven't got an albatross. Can I go into my wedding reception? He said, yes, I'm sorry to have bothered you with my story. Can you tell me your name? He said, well, yes, it's Mr. Ross. Albert. And he ran for the door just as the crossbow bolt thudded into the side of the door. And the poor little man was so upset by meeting this bizarre stranger that although a teetotaler all his life, he drank half a glass of cider right down, collapsed from alcohol, was carried home, and the following morning had the first hangover of his life. His eyes wouldn't focus. He was all sort of muzzy and wuzzy. So, this is my cautionary tale. If you're going to a wedding reception and you're a teetotaler, don't get talking to strangers lurking outside calling themselves Argent Mulliner. Or, well, as Coleridge said, you'll meet the fate of poor little Albert Ross. A cider and a wuzzier man, he woke the morrow morn.
Dennis, tell us how nothing succeeds like success.
Well, I'm sorry, but I have to report the failure of yet another of my business ventures. And what makes this belly flop so particularly galling is that it wasn't only a product to which I'd attached my own name, it was also one that stood every chance of restoring Britain to its rightful place among nations, i.e. top. Now, like all great schemes, this venture had simple beginnings. One morning, my son came in and said, "Dad, can I borrow one of your suits tonight?" And I said, "Certainly, lad. What do you want it for?" He said, "I'm going to a fancy dress party." Well, just as I was about to fell him to the ground with a bound copy of Dr. Spock, my hand was halted by a thought so startling it almost had the force of a revelation. What if it were literally true that clothes maketh the man? In other words, could the reason why the present generation behaves so differently from my own be solely because they don't wear the same clothes that we did? To test my theory, I tried to remember all the items of male apparel that you no longer see around, and the one that immediately leapt to mind as hugely important was braces. Now, if you're asking yourself why I should consider the disappearance of braces of such importance, well, just think of the physical effect that had. When Englishmen gave up wearing those elasticated straps around their shoulders, the one activity that became easier for them to do was shrugging. Now, I maintain that was a very important factor in our subsequent decline. Because, my friends, the shrug is not merely a gesture that was formerly associated only with foreigners. What is shrugging fundamentally an expression of? Apathy, disinterestedness, cynicism, the very failings that the good Sir Keith Joseph is forever mumbling on about. So isn't it logical that if we were now to get rid of the physical condition that brought about shrugging, we'd also get rid of the state of mind that it generated? In other words, restore braces to the trousers of the nation, and you'll restore our drive and sense of commitment. Now, I was beginning to discern what my vocation would be. But wait, could there be a vanished item of male apparel that might prove even more socially valuable? What about back studs? Now, surely it was their disappearance that led to today's bitter arguments between the sexes and arguments about walnut trees and beating dogs and things like that. Because back in the time when women wore bras and men wore back studs, then both the sexes had to start the day trying to do something up behind their head. Now that could well have been the product I'd have set about relaunching had I not chanced to wander into a Soho bookshop. Because there, by sheer chance, I came across a publication whose title showed that my idea had already been anticipated, because it was actually called Stud. Oh, God, darn it. There's no point in pursuing the project if there's already a trade magazine about it. But it was while I was idly glancing through the mag that the final suggestion for my product emerged, because in the course of an article rather oddly entitled The Randy Milkman of Rye Slips, I suddenly espied the sentence, nothing turns a man on more than suspenders. It was like a blinding flash of illumination. Isn't our Prime Minister always saying that what the British workman's got to do is pull his socks up? Well, when was it his socks began slipping down? The day he gave up wearing sock suspenders. And thus it was that the major share of my life savings went into the venture that became known as the Dennis Norden Reborn Sock Suspender. One man's effort. You're too late. Where were you when I needed you to buy them? I called it one man's effort to aid our national recovery. In the event, of course, the idea, as I've already hinted, proved either 10 years ahead of its time or about 30 years behind it. Perhaps the most apt comment on its failure was the headline in the Financial Times on the day that we went into receivership. Norden's Socks Aids lack success.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I see from the score sheet that Gillian and Dennis are the winners of this week's contest. And so now it's goodbye from Dennis Powell, Gillian Reynolds, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden.
In my word, the chairman was John Julius Norwich. The questions were compiled by Peter Moore, and the program was produced by Tony Schrein. Thank you.